Senator Mathias, we are now well into the president's program of disclosure of facts, which has been called Operation Candor, and one of the first new facts to come out is that 18 minutes of one of the tape recordings is blanked out by an audible tone. Do you think this has seriously damaged the president's credibility with people?
Oh, I think each one of these disclosures, each one of these failures to produce evidence that's been promised, nibbles away at credibility. And it's the greatest argument that I can think of for a massive, complete, total disclosure of all the evidence that's available at one time. That's the only way we're ever going to get Watergate behind us.
How can he do it?
The physical evidence is there. It's not only the tapes. It's memoranda. It's documents, papers, things that Archibald Cox had requested, for example, before his dismissal of the telephone logs and appointment logs of various White House staff members. They haven't been produced. Why not? That is the continuing haunting question, and the only way to answer that question is to get it all out in the open, and then we know where we are.
From CBS News, Washington, Face the Nation on the CBS Radio Network. A spontaneous and unrehearsed news interview with Senator Charles Mathias, Jr., Republican of Maryland. Senator Mathias will be questioned by CBS News correspondent Fred Graham, Adam Clymer, White House correspondent of the Baltimore Sun, and by CBS News correspondent George Herman. Our interview will continue in a few moments.
It seems like before we even unwind from last year, the holidays are on us again. Hello, this is Nicholas Hammond, and though I'm busy getting ready for the holidays, I haven't been too busy to send off an answer to my Christmas Seal letter. How about you? Christmas Seals have been battling lung disease for over 66 years. Though they've come a long way in the fight against tuberculosis, TB is still a serious health problem in our ghettos and barrios. Christmas Seals are also very much concerned with the quality of the air you breathe. And these bright holiday decorations also fight a very serious lung crippler, emphysema. So please find the time to put Christmas Seals this year on every card and gift package that leaves the house. As you live and breathe, give to Christmas Seals.
Of the wind or tidal changes, honey.
Daddy, who teaches the seagulls how to fly?
Well, flying is a mechanical instinct of birds. Honey, Daddy's busy. Why don't you go out and play?
Okay, Daddy. Daddy?
Oh, what is it now?
What's God like?
I don't know, honey. Go ask your mother.
I don't know, honey. Go ask your father.
The Lutheran Church in America.
Now, once again, here is CBS News correspondent George Herman. Senator Mathias, some of the president's critics have said that every time he offers an explanation himself in a speech or an appearance someplace, it brings up a new contradiction. Is this part of what you have cranked into your answer, that he should turn over all documents, all the physical evidence?
That's right. You take the answers that were given, say the May 22nd statement, which is contradictory to things that have been said in the last couple of weeks. And this is why I think there is a general outcry for total disclosure. And it doesn't come from Democrats alone or from liberal Republicans alone. Peter Dominick, for example, who's generally considered to be a conservative Republican senator from Colorado, has issued one of the most impassioned pleas for full disclosure. Senator Goldwater has even gone to the extent of saying the president should come to the Watergate committee to make this full disclosure. And I think it's the only way you're going to get rid of the confusion which has grown instead of diminished as a result of this piecemeal disclosure.
Senator Mathias, since Halloween we've heard of the two tapes that never were and the dicta belt that never was, and then this last week We heard about the 18-minute hum in the middle of one of the subpoenaed tapes. Do you believe these gaps in evidence are as innocent as the White House tells us, or do you think something was destroyed?
Well, of course, it's possible. It's possible that these are just the normal mechanical failures which do occur. Adam, you and I both have experienced it. But the problem is that the American people will never know. This is going to be one of the great unanswered questions of history. Nobody will ever know. And the name of the game at this point is to give people some assurance. And you can't give them assurance when you're constantly creating new uncertainties. And that's the tragedy of what's going on, and that's why it's all got to be brought out in one massive disclosure.
Well, Senator, I'm aware that as a member of the Senate, and you would be sitting as a juror in any impeachment, and that you can't talk about the merits of impeachment, but on the question of whether or not impeachment might be a way to clear the air, can you address yourself to whether or not, just to go through the exercise, innocent or guilty, win or lose, that might not be the best path to take at this point?
Well, of course, some of the president's best friends, some of his closest associates, Senator Norris Cotton, for example, a Republican senator from New Hampshire, has suggested that the impeachment process might be a vehicle for vindication. And while the president has resisted that, some of his friends still believe it. Fred, look at what's happened at this point. We have three separate processes working. You've got Judge Sirica's court, you've got the Watergate Special Committee, and you've got the Special Prosecutor's staff working. Now, each of these ultimately get to a sort of a final roadblock, whether it's the tapes or whether it's refusal to produce documentary evidence or whether there's some other obstacle placed in the way of final solutions. The only tribunal where there is no obstacle to the full command of evidence is, of course, an impeachment proceeding, because that's the place where there is no special privilege, where there is no ability to withhold any evidence on any technical ground. And unless there is this kind of a disclosure, I think that the alternatives to impeachment become less and less and less.
Well, I take it that what you're saying is that unless the president very quickly, voluntarily, makes total disclosure, that you do favor impeachment proceedings, if not the actual impeachment.
There will be very little alternative, because that's the only way you get the full disclosure, which is the answer.
Would you tell us what's holding the president back then?
I wish I knew. In the summer of 71, summer of 72, I had, just after the Watergate break-in, I talked to Bill Timmons, who was then the chief legislative advisor of the president, and pled with him at that time. I said, Bill, tell the president, let everything come out right now. You'll have 48 bad hours and it'll be over. And of course, this wasn't done then and hasn't been done since then, and it's gotten consistently worse.
Let me ask you a very blunt question, to which you are, of course, at liberty to take the Fifth Amendment. Do you think that the president has withheld this complete disclosure because of any one of a number of reasons? Because he believes that it would be damaging to the institution of the presidency? Because he is, because of a personal feeling that this is just not a right thing for Richard Nixon to do? Or do you think, I'm looking for your gut reaction, that he's doing this because he thinks it would damage him seriously?
George, none of us likes bad news. Confessions come hard. Admission of mistakes come hard. This is human. I have the same problem. Maybe even you have it. And I think there's a natural reluctance, a natural desire to withhold as much as you can. And I think this is that human process at work, over and above all the institutional considerations for the office of the presidency. And I think this has been a fatal thing. I think this is one of those cases where total exposure at the very beginning would have just minimized the damage.
To come back to the impeachment proceeding, you said that that's the only tribunal where there is no privilege in terms of withholding evidence. Is this based on any discussion you've had with the White House? Do you think they would, in fact, produce anything that were subpoenaed?
Well, it's my conviction that there is no privilege which would prevail against an impeachment proceeding. And I haven't discussed it with the White House, but I think it's the case. Now, happily, as a nation, we haven't had very much experience with it, so there aren't a lot of precedents. But I can't imagine that any sort of privilege would be upheld, because this is, of course, the ultimate inquiry of the nation. And what can stand before it? Nothing, I think.
Senator, you were in on one of these so-called stroking sessions at the White House several days ago, and did the president at that time tell you and your fellow Republican senators that he was going to make full disclosure?
Yes, he promised full disclosure. He, of course, raised the problem of the involvement of third parties, of innocent people, of people who had conflicting claims, people who had perhaps been indicted and whose cases might be affected, that kind of problem.
Did he raise national security?
National security was one consideration. But, for instance, I asked him I think, very tough question. What were the reasons that the Houston plan was adopted? What were the threats to national security that were so severe that they had to organize the plumbers? And why were the statutory law enforcement agencies not adequate to take care of it? Why did you have to go out and organize a clandestine police force? He gave me a very brief answer at the time, but has promised to supply an amplified answer, and I'm looking forward to that. Now, of course, a lot hangs on the candor and completeness of this kind of response.
What's your impression of the controversy which has since arisen from these meetings about the disagreement between General Haig and Elliot Richardson over who said what about the cock firing?
Well, I think that's an unhappy episode, but not an unimportant one, because it raises the very serious question of due process. The Senate Judiciary Committee has Attorney General Richardson's testimony. Now, that's been contested. It raises a question as to the validity of Senate investigations. I think, secondly, it raises the question of the reason for Cox's removal. The American people were promised an independent prosecutor. They didn't get one, or at least they lost one, and they're entitled to know the reason that they lost it. And thirdly, I think it raises an interesting and serious question. Was the Cox firing an obstruction of justice? If General Haig's version of the story is right, then there was no obstruction of justice. If Attorney General Richardson's version is correct, then under Judge Gazelle's ruling, the Cox firing was illegal, and it does become an obstruction of
justice. Well, then this is a key question for your committee, the committee that you're a member of, the judiciary.
Very key question.
Is it going to tackle it this Tuesday, or is it going to put it over or delay it?
Well, as you know, I brought the question up at the last meeting of the Judiciary Committee, and it was, under the rules of the committee, put over for a week. And so we'll just have to go back and see how the committee feels about it.
Could I change the subject, Senator? Last week, in testimony, Vice Presidential Designate Jerry Ford, in setting out his views, said that he favored three constitutional amendments, one to overturn the Supreme Court's decision on abortions, one to overturn his decision on school prayer, and the other was to limit busing. Do you agree with any of that?
Well, I think these are areas of constitutional amendment that are dangerous. When you get down into this kind of specific issue-oriented amendment, rather than to the question of the constitutional process, which is what the Constitution is all about, I think. These are specific issues. They're tremendously important issues. They are emotional issues. But they are the issues which the constitutional machinery is intended to handle. I don't think that you necessarily have to embed these issues in the Constitution itself. And I would think that we ought to be able to handle those issues outside of the amending process.
Well, now, as a general matter, it appears to me that Gerald Ford is far more conservative on this and other issues than you are. Would that tend to make you not support him, or do you think you should go ahead and and support him for the vice presidency because he's in your party and your president has named him.
Well, let me say that Jerry Ford and I served together in the House for a number of years. I'm generally familiar with his 25-year record of service representing the Grand Rapids District in Michigan. And I suppose that we would disagree on many specific issues over that period of time. But that doesn't dispel the fact that that I view Jerry Ford as a decent man and a good man, and that decency is one of the qualities that I think the country needs today, and that he does have, and that I could bridge our differences on individual issues because I think that basically he is a solid and a decent man.
Senator Mathias, what, come back to Watergate in another context, you're up for election next year. I guess you're going to run. But we've had...
Stop and give him a chance to say yes or no.
You're going to run?
I expect to be looking to the people of Maryland for, okay, for another lease.
Well, we've had a lot of evidence that Watergate and other disclosures have put the Republican Party in a much weaker position in 1974 than it might have expected to be after the landslide of 72. John Anderson has said he wouldn't run for the Senate and has said this is a reason. George Bush has said he won't run for governor of Texas and has said this wasn't a reason, but most people seem to think it's an element. How badly do you think the party is going to be hurt?
Well, I think, number one, all parties are hurt. The latest Gallup poll shows that the Democratic Party has lost some of its declared support as well as the Republican Party. Not only, not as much, but I think all organized politics are hurt by Watergate. But I think the Republican Party is very seriously hurt. It's not only the instances that you cite, but, for instance, the Republican National Headquarters has had to cut its staff by 25%. The Republican Senatorial Campaign Committee has only got about 10% of the funds on hand it would normally have at this season approaching an election year. The states, the Republican parties in the states are all reporting difficulties. The elections that were held earlier this month have clear signs of Republican problems. So this is just one more reason for that massive disclosure that I'm talking about so that you can find out where we are and get on with it.
Well, what can you do except ask and hope for the disclosure? Supposing you don't get the disclosure, your letter about
plan. Then we come back to Fred Graham's question that the only ultimate method of getting disclosure is the process in the House of Representatives, which has begun. And I think, of course, a lot of us overlook the fact that is an ongoing process. The House has appropriated $1 million for the impeachment inquiry, and that's a very serious step to take.
Sounds like a two-year step. You think that there will be any action within calendar 1974 on this? Any definitive action in the House?
Well, Senator Howard Baker said a week or so ago that we've only seen the tip of the iceberg.
What does he mean by that?
Well, time will tell. But if that is to be taken literally, and we are seeing more and more of the iceberg, then I don't think that you're going to wait 2 years. I think then this question will be the urgent question in 1974, and people are not going to be able to wait until after the 74 elections because this will be the issue in 1974.
You don't think that...
1974.
You don't think that energy and fuel and shortage is going to be the question?
The bread and butter issues like energy, taxes, housing, education, health care, these are all going to be issues. But there can be an overriding issue which I think could develop.
Can I ask you an unpenetrating question, Senator? You mentioned a minute ago the overriding decency of Gerald Ford, and I gather what you think is the country needs in leadership now more than anything decency. Have you yourself given any thought to running for president in 1976?
No.
Why not?
Well, in answer to Adam's question a minute ago, I'm running, I hope to run for the Senate in Maryland, and that's as far, I think,
Isn't that about the classic rejoinder for somebody who doesn't want to acknowledge something? I'm only going to run for governor of my state.
No, it's a fact. I look to the people of Maryland for another term in the Senate, and I think that's my place.
Senator, come back to energy for a second. The president's going to make a speech about this tonight. One of the themes in some of his recent pronouncements on the subject has been that Congress hasn't been active enough, that Congress hasn't passed laws he's asked them to pass. Speaker Albert in the House answered that rather angrily yesterday. Do you think that's a fair accusation, that Congress hasn't been paying enough attention?
Congress has been very aware of this problem. It's been coming on for years, as you know. Well over a year ago, we had the Atomic Energy Commission come in for briefings on the projection for the next 30 years. Somewhat alarming projections, and this was long before the Mideast War broke out, alarming projections which predicted that the average private automobile by the end of the century will only be able to have the energy we now put into golf carts. So Congress has been aware of this. There have been various preliminary steps taken within the Congress. What we have all failed to do, and I think there's plenty of blame to go around, we've all failed to coordinate the concern which has been felt into a program. And we have failed to generate in the public that sense of urgency which now exists. If we had done that 5 years ago, we wouldn't be facing this problem today, whether or not there had been an Arab-Israeli war.
Whose job is it to do that?
Well, of course, under modern conditions, we have allowed the presidency to become the chief moral leader of the country. Now, I think this is one of the failures of Congress. I think that Congress should not have allowed this to come to pass. I think this perverts the constitutional process.
Let me ask you something about congressional leadership. Your own committee, Judiciary, twice recently, you've taken an important issue and you've sort of thrown up your hands and say, well, we got this bill and we got that bill. We really can't make a decision. We'll throw it up to the floor. And you sort of abdicated on it.
I think
on the question of the special prosecutor, on the special of the question of Mr. Saxby's constitutionality?
Congress has abdicated as an institution much too much. And I think that's part of the problem that we're in. I don't think you could have ever had Watergate if the original concept of constitutional process had been strictly observed. Because if you had a national security problem, for example, there would have been a shared decision between the executive and the Congress. There would not have been the creation of the plumbers private. Now that's, I think, one of the great problems that we have, and this is one of the reasons that we've got to go back and restore the constitutional process.
Senator, in terms of the energy situation right now, the bill that the Senate passed last week, isn't that just another example of
very much concerned by that, and that's the reason I offered an amendment, which I'm very glad was adopted, which provided for some check on the executive authority in dealing with the energy crisis. So that people do not get pushed around as they are now in the wage price controls. The amendment I offered provides for publication of regulations, for hearings, for public access to the decision-making process. This is vital if we're to keep some sort of congressional oversight active and if the public's to have a fair shake in the energy crisis. And yet the bill, as it came out of committee, had no such provisions at all.
Well, why can't Congress, for example, bite the bullet and take a stand on whether there ought to be gasoline rationing instead of shifting it and letting the question just be delayed and not decided?
I think it could, or at least it could set up specific standards. I don't think Congress necessarily has to execute the laws, but it can set specific standards. It can say, when such conditions exist, then an action is triggered. And that's what we have failed to do.
Do you think we need it now, gasoline rationing?
Secretary Morton says at the present rate of consumption, fuel stocks will be at minimum levels by the first of the year. If that's the case, then I don't think we can continue consuming at this rate. Then I think rationing might as well begin. Not that I want to see rationing. I don't know who would. But we cannot go through these balmy fall days in sort of blissful ignorance and then wake up to literally a cold shock in January.
Well, there seems to be a sort of an anti-rationing backlash among politicians. There was a lot of talk about rationing maybe a month ago, and in the last week or so, people in government have been shying away from that. Do you see what's happening here, perhaps? They're afraid that they will be blamed by the people if rationing proves to be unpopular.
Those of us who remember rationing, of course, know what a mess it is, and nobody wants it. On the other hand, if that's the only way to share things, if that's the only way to make what we've got go around, what else can you do?
Well, it's not the only way, but people talk about a heavy tax. What do you think about the comparison between a heavy tax on fuel and...
Well, it may be that there could be some blend, but, you know, this is a life-and-death question. It's not just your Sunday drive. It's not just your 38-degree temperature in your... or 68-degree temperature in your living room. It's things like the artificial kidney, which is made out of plastic, a petroleum-based product. Are we going to get those fuel stocks around to people who need them for life and death purposes? And I think that's the kind of level this has reached, and that's why you have to think about rationing, as distasteful and as unhappy as it is.
For how long?
Well, this
don't
is...
Give you a chance to answer.
Well, maybe... many years.
Thank you very much for being with us on Face the Nation.
Stop calling, and there are messages you can't afford to miss.
A thought from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the Mormons.
Hi, I'm Danny Kaye, and I'm like the old woman who lived in a shoe and had so many children she didn't know what to do. Only my kids run into the millions. And I know what should be done. As a roving ambassador for UNICEF, the United Nations Children's Fund, I've watched UNICEF in action all over the world. I've seen UNICEF help fight to keep kids alive with medicine and medical care, to see that they're nourished with proper food and to help with their education. Will you help me help the kids?
Today on Face the Nation, Senator Charles Mathias Jr., Republican of Maryland, was interviewed by CBS News correspondent Fred Graham, Adam Clymer, White House correspondent of the Baltimore Sun, and CBS News correspondent George Herman. Next week, another prominent figure in the news will face the nation. Today's broadcast was recorded earlier today in Washington and was produced by Sylvia Westerman and Prentice Childs. Robert Vitarelli was the director. Face the Nation is a production of CBS News. Listen to Mike Roy's Cooking Thing Monday through Saturday here on the CBS Radio Network.